And there is Sabrina Ionescu with the rebound. She has just become the first player in Division I history with 2,000 points, 1,000 assists, and 1,000 rebounds. A historic mark set by Sabrina Ionescu.
Just 2 months ago, Oregon senior Sabrina Ionescu was on top of the basketball world, smashing records and gearing up for an NCAA championship run. But when the tournament was canceled, that dream was left unfulfilled. But tomorrow night, she'll complete a different dream when she is undoubtedly selected first overall in the WNBA draft. Today, Ionescu joins us to talk about what's next. Then we look at the rest of the draft, and we ask what it all means for a season in limbo. I'm Ina Kimes. This is ESPN Daily. Hey, Sabrina, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
That's Sabrina Ionescu, the presumptive number one pick in tomorrow's WNBA draft. I'm good. So the draft is tomorrow night. First, tell us, what is the scene at your house going to be like?
I'm really just going to be with my parents, my brother and his wife, and then my twin brother. Just a small group of us that have been together and just watch the TV and have a good time.
Are you going to get dressed up in any way, which these days means just putting on pants with a button?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to wear a dress or anything. I think I'm just going to put on jeans and a shirt.
That's big, though. That's big in the quarantine.
It is big. It is big.
That shows you're serious. I can't remember the last time I wore jeans, but that's neither here nor there. You are not the only Duck headed to the pros. Your teammates, Sato Sabali, Ruthie Hebbard, are both being projected as first-round picks, which is, of course, a reminder to everyone of how good the team was. Obviously, the tournament being canceled was a big disappointment after you returned for a final season. I want to ask about it this way. What do you think you gained from coming back for that last year?
I think I gained so much, just maturity, leadership, and just really the relationships that I built during that last year. I mean, so many people were excited and happy that I returned. And I mean, I think the community just around women's basketball in Oregon grew. And so it was really eye-opening to be able to see just all the relationships that I made during that year and just how close as a team that we got. And so obviously that translated on the court as well, just evolving my game and getting better on all sides.
So the draft is happening, which is great, even though it's virtual, but there is no certainty right now around the actual season. How are you wrapping your mind around that?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard just trying to figure out when to ramp up training and exactly, you know, knowing when the season's going to be played and when you're supposed to be in your prime. And so just trying to do everything I can to stay in shape. So as of now, I'm just running, playing basketball, working out, and, you know, not trying to do too much too soon just because I'm not sure when the season's going to start, but just staying mentally and physically ready.
You have wanted to play in the WNBA since you were very young. We have video evidence of that.
Well, I started to play basketball at the age of 3, though I was just throwing the ball around. I gained a lot of experience playing on my brother's 10-foot hoop. Overall, I have valued all my basketball experiences, and I'm looking forward to many more. My family has always been there for inspiration to keep pushing and one day become a WNBA player. Thank you.
And now that it's here, it's sort of at your footstep, how do you feel it'll be different from the basketball you played so far?
I mean, it's going to be completely different, just the physicality, the level of competition. It's kind of just a new way of taking on the game and a new way of basketball. It's going to be completely different than college, high school, anything that I've ever done. And so I'm really excited, you know, for the opportunity to get better and just learn and finding different ways to look up to not only my teammates, but other veterans in the league and trying to evolve my game in that aspect.
What do you anticipate being the most challenging part?
Probably just getting adjusted to the physicality and the speed of the game. I mean, coming in as a rookie, there's players there that, you know, I've been playing for 10 plus years. And so they're going to make sure, you know, they let you know that you're a rookie. And so I think that aspect is going to be fun, but also challenging.
You got a preview of the pros last November when your team played and beat Team USA.
What a moment for the Oregon Ducks, defeating the iconic, mighty United States women's national team, 93-86.
What was that like?
It was awesome to just be able to share a court with them and learn from them. obviously the win was awesome, but I think it was even more special that, you know, we were able to have a sellout crowd against Team USA and just learn from them and engage in conversation with them and be able to share a court with them, because not a lot of people can say that they've done that.
Was there anyone on that court that made you geek out a little, where you were like, I cannot believe I'm right now on a basketball court with this person?
I mean, for sure, like Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi, there were so many players, but I think those would probably be two of my favorite, just because I've gotten to know them a little bit, and being able to play with them was an honor.
So every mock draft, every analyst, every article has you projected to be the first overall pick. How does that make you feel?
I mean, until my name's called, until I can, you know, sign the paper, I'm not too excited about it. I don't want to be disappointed, so I never expect anything. So obviously very humbled and excited about the opportunity to be playing in Brooklyn and in that organization. But until I hear my name called and know it's official, I'm kind of just keeping a level head.
So if you did go first overall, you know, the New York Liberty were, of course, 10 and 24 last season, or anywhere you'd go near the top, you'd be on a rebuilding team. How does that strike you, joining a team that's not already on the top?
I mean, I did that at Oregon for the last 4 years, so I know exactly what it's like having to come in and kind of build a program from the ground up. So that doesn't scare me at all. And I'm excited to be, you know, a piece of the puzzle and hopefully get things rolling.
When you look back at your college career and take stock of it, what was the most special moment to you?
I'd probably just say time with my teammates and getting to a Final Four. And there were so many highs through those 4 years and so many great wins, and just being able to do that with a group of girls and team that really cares about each other was very, very special.
What was the lowest moment?
Probably losing in the Final Four and ending my career short. Was those two probably were the worst.
How did you get the news that the tournament was canceled?
Our coach had texted us and basically just said, you guys can stay where you are with your families. You don't have to return to Eugene. The tournament's canceled. I'm sorry. And everyone kind of was responding in that group message. It was our team group chat. And so he let us know. And obviously it was heartbreaking. I don't think any of us were expecting it to go that direction.
How long did it take you to kind of process that?
You know, I wasn't really processing it. I tried not to think about it too much and just was like, all right, well, this is out of my control. It is what it is. And kind of just try to look forward on what was next. And there were so many things going on that I didn't really, you know, focus on it too much. And, you know, probably one day I'll look back and just wish that we could have went on with the season, so we could have seen, you know, how it would have turned out and would have been able to play my last game and knowing it was my last game. But just try not to look back on it too much.
We had an episode where we, I guess, 538 ran a simulation on the tournament. They had Baylor winning. Now, our analyst opposed that idea. How do you think it would have played out?
I don't think we were going to lose again. I guess take that as you want it, but I did not see us losing again. So
yeah,
that's all I could say.
Well, I think watching the draft and seeing the number of players who are going to be taken first overall, that doesn't seem like a outrageous proposition.
No, I mean, three out of the top 10 probably are going to be going to the league from one team. That speaks for itself, and yeah, super excited for my teammates. But I do think it speaks about what we had as a team there, and probably very, you know, not likely that another team would ever, you know, get to that point again.
What is the aspect of playing regularly that you miss the most?
Just competing and playing games, and especially in Eugene, just having our fan base. I mean, we were projected to have two more sellout crowds and probably about 20,000 people in Portland if we made it to the regionals. And so having that support system and playing a real game is something that I'm missing right now.
You mentioned that, you know, Oregon and Team USA, you guys sold out a game. Obviously, you have gotten a lot of people excited about women's basketball, some people that maybe weren't as excited before. How do you hope to continue that when you get to the pros?
Yeah, I mean, it's been awesome to see the transformation in Eugene with fans from my first year to my last. And, you know, hopefully being able to bring that excitement to wherever team I end up and kind of just change the way that they view women in sports, and hopefully, you know, can bring joy and happiness, you know, competing and that is kind of addicting, and people do want to be a part of that and watch and be a part of that culture. So hopefully just taking that from what I did in Eugene and bringing that to whatever team I'm on.
What would you say to people to bring them in, to come watch next year when you're in the WNBA? What can you bring to the table that'll excite these fans?
Yeah, I mean, just the competitive nature and the love of the game. And I think that's what people hold on to. And I mean, the fans and the community that we build as a team with our fan base is so important to the success of a team. And so hoping to just, you know, get them to understand they're just as important as we are to what we're trying to accomplish. And so hopefully, you know, wherever that is that I do end up playing, the community kind of brings us in, just like we're going to bring them in to be a part of the team and just kind of enjoy that journey with us.
Thanks so much, Sabrina. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
Coming up, ESPN basketball analyst LaChyna Robinson joins us to preview tomorrow night's draft and explains how the league can attempt to move forward at a time with so much uncertainty. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Hey, LaChyna.
What's up, Mina? How are you?
LaChyna Robinson covers the WNBA and women's college basketball for ESPN. I am excited to talk about an event in sports that is actually happening.
Yes, WNBA draft, bring it on.
So it is Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Well, let's start there. Why is it happening?
Well, I think it's important for the WNBA to push forward with the draft in the safest way possible, of course, in order to capitalize on the momentum that was building for the 2020 season. Now, we don't know when or if the season will actually happen because there's so many questions still to be answered. Obviously, much broader conversation to be had. But coming off the synergy of a new CBA, the craziest free agency period ever, like in the history of the league, it's just a lot of excitement around the league, a lot to look forward to. And just there's not a lot happening on the landscape of sport in general right now. So this is a great opportunity for the WNBA to be front and center. And of course, it's great that ESPN is giving them the showcase.
Have you heard anything from teams about how they're approaching the draft, given that it's happening virtually and there wasn't a tournament?
So a lot of the teams are having their war rooms virtually. I've heard that coaches have multiple computers, their phones all activated, communicating with their staff, GM and head coaches, keeping up with what's happening with the picks coming in. There's just a lot to digest, but staying safe, staying socially distant, quarantined, and just trying to navigate a new way to make the best decisions for their teams. And it hurt the WNBA draft that there was no NCAA tournament, because that is really the platform where a lot of these GMs and coaches get to see these players play against the best in women's college basketball. So definitely challenging in any season, but more challenging without the NCAA tournament heading into this draft.
LaChyna, we just spoke with Sabrina Ionescu, who, as you know, holds the record for men's and women's triple doubles in the NCAA. Is there any universe in which she is not picked first overall by the New York Liberty?
No. There is no universe at all in which that will not happen. I mean, she is the sure pick at number one going to New York. But there's so much more about Sabrina that I think people need to know. I mean, she's been the best player in women's college basketball over the last couple of seasons. And when I think about the greatest competitors in the women's game that I've covered, it starts with Diana Taurasi and Tamika Catchings, Maya Moore. And Sabrina has that intangible quality where her drive alone and her will to win really just elevates her entire team. I mean, then you look at how many different ways she can impact the game. She can put points on the board. She can rebound. She has incredible vision for ball distribution at 5'11". And the WNBA just really places a great value on that level of versatility.
She's also a household name already. I mean, how big of a deal is it for the league to have her in New York in particular?
Well, having her in a major market is huge. I mean, if her game translates well to the next level, she could have a major impact on the popularity of the game. She reminds me so much of Diana Taurasi, who has the respect of everyone from your middle school coach to the guys on the blacktop in the neighborhood because of the level of excellence and skill and just the disrespect that she brings to her competitors every time she touches the court. And of course, the other thing that Sabrina Ionescu brings with her to the WNBA is her relationship with NBA players. I mean, I saw something on Instagram that looked like Sabrina spending time with Steph Curry during this quarantine. They were 6 feet apart. LeBron has given her shout outs. She gets high praise and well-deserved from a lot of notable NBA players and just athletes, famous athletes in general. She brings that as well to New York with her, which could grow the popularity of that team, but also of the league.
Let's keep going in the first round. Two of Sabrina's teammates at Oregon are also looking like they could get picked early. Sato Sabali is projected to go number 2 overall to the Dallas Wings. What is she like as a player?
It's interesting, Mina. I had a conversation with Skylar Diggins-Smith for the NBA on their IG Live, and our U.S. women's national team actually played Oregon during their college tour earlier this season, and they lost to the Ducks. And Skylar is, you know, coming back. She's a 4-time All-Star in her own right. And the first thing out of her mouth after that game was Satu Sabali was the most pro-ready player on that team.
Sabali, everybody's drooling over her in the WNBA. Everybody.
She is the prototypical stretch four that is long, athletic, can finish with either hand, has good rebounding ability, great defensive potential, and can knock down the three.
Oh. Sabali hits the three as she hits the deck.
The other Oregon player who could go early is Ruthie Hebert. ESPN has her projected to go number 11 overall to the Seattle Storm. How good is she? And also, man, how good would Oregon have been in the tournament?
Oh, my goodness. I have nightmares about what we missed out on not getting to see this Oregon team in the NCAA tournament. As far as Ruthie, you know, this may sound crazy, but I think she may have the greatest upside of that group of Oregon players.
Hebert, so good. Those feet so quick.
But also has more of a gap to close to really find her stride as a pro. She's rather small for a center in the WNBA at 6'4", when you have 6'8 Liz Cambage and 6'9 Brittany Griner to compete with. It's ideal for her to grow into the four spot, that stretch power forward, but she needs more of an effective face-up game. And yes, she is the Pac-12's all-time leader in field goal percentage and works extremely hard on her game. So there's no doubt she's going to have success, but there's definitely room to go for Ruthie to really find her fit.
I don't want to keep dwelling on the tournament and what would have happened, but the other team I think a lot of people projected to win was Baylor. And their star, Lauren Cox, is projected to go 3rd overall in the draft. Tell me about her.
Lauren Cox is a tremendous player and could have great success in the WNBA because of her combination of size, but also skill.
Lauren Cox, turnaround, beautiful touch, nothing but net.
The thing that sets her apart is her decision-making. She doesn't get rattled, plays the game with great poise, can find the open player when she's got multiple defenders in her face-up game, which, again, going back to the versatility and how much of an asset that is in the WNBA, you know, it puts her at the top of a lot of lists for GMs and coaches.
Generally, in the WNBA, can young players, rookies, come in and make immediate impact compared to, say, the NBA?
It's rare in the WNBA just because I think there's a bigger gap between the talent level in women's college basketball and that at the pro level. these 144 women have played basketball year round for their entire pro career. So they're going overseas and they're playing multiple positions and, you know, they're coming back to the WNBA and playing against other great players. And so it's just an incredible jump for a college player. And that's why it's so hard to make a roster.
Well, speaking of these players playing overseas and, you know, making a living by playing in leagues across the world, has women's basketball in other countries also been shut down because of the coronavirus pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. The season starts in May for the WNBA until September, October, and then players go overseas to supplement their income, where most of them on average make more money than they do here in the U.S. We will see more of the top tier players staying in market in the offseason with the new CBA. But for those that desire to play overseas, I'm not exactly sure what those opportunities will look like moving forward, coming off of what we're seeing with the coronavirus. I mean, think about a player like Derica Hamby, who was in Italy when all this happened in quarantine and was being threatened if she left to go home. And all she wanted to do was come back to the U.S. and be with her family. Or Sydney Weiss, who was the first confirmed coronavirus case in the WNBA. She was in Spain and ended up, I mean, she didn't want to travel because she didn't want to put other people at risk. This was before she knew she had it. But that was really the only window for her to try to get home. And so I think these players are going to look at overseas opportunities a little different, especially after going through such a scary time when there was a world crisis.
LaChyna, given all the momentum that women's basketball had before all this started, you know, the new CBA, a draft with a star like Sabrina Ionescu coming out, how devastating would it be for the league if this season doesn't happen at all?
I think it would be very devastating because the timing of all of the things you just mentioned are so perfect for the WNBA to really have a breakthrough season. I do think it would be a time where the league could show some creativity if they aren't able to hit the court. Their players are now in market. Are there ways that they can virtually market them? Can they work on sponsorships in the off season? Can they create unique events that aren't necessarily WNBA contests, but ways for fans to interact and get to know the players? There are opportunities there, but considering this storm of just really positive things happening and trending in the league, this would be a wonderful time to kick off WNBA season.
Well, speaking of events and crossover stuff, you know, we've got Allie Quigley in the horse tournament tonight. Do you think she's going to win?
I think she's going to win. I think she's going to win. I mean, I have learned not to bet against Allie Quigley. She is a journeyman in the WNBA, has really had to fight and claw and scratch her way onto a roster where she's had, you know, some success now and earned a ton of respect. And, you know, I just want to say that I love this horse tournament and that it includes WNBA players because it goes a long way for the visibility of the league. I mean, sometimes the WNBA gets buried. NBA, NFL, I get it, etc. WNBA is a league that's still growing in its popularity. So it's good to see them in position to gain new fans and also the respect of some naysayers. And Allie Quigley is a heck of a shooter. And though my alma mater, Wake Forest, had to take a hit with Chris Paul going down, taking that L, hopefully people start to arrive at the fact that basketball is just basketball. But go Allie. I'm all for it. She's got a rep.
Thanks so much, LaChyna.
Thank you for having me, Mina.
Coming up, one soccer program is cut. Could others face the axe as well? We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe You just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes, simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Here's a number I want you to know. $800,000. That's how much the University of Cincinnati is reportedly saving by cutting their men's soccer program, a decision the athletic department explained earlier this week by citing uncertainty around the pandemic. Given that this is the second major college program to be cut since this all began, Old Dominion axed its wrestling program first, college sports staffers, enthusiasts, and athletes across the country are concerned, and rightfully so. Amidst the ongoing questions about scheduling, loss of revenue from tournaments like March Madness, the financial picture for college sports across the country is extremely murky right now. And there's reason to believe Cincinnati could be the canary in the coal mine. Yahoo Sports' Pete Thamel recently wrote that the Group of Five commissioners sent a letter to the NCAA asking for relief from certain requirements, including the rule that every FBS school has to have 16 programs. Now, it's worth noting, Cincinnati might have cut soccer anyways. According to a piece by R. Mark Schlebach, the team hasn't been very successful recently. The longtime coach just resigned. They recently posted an operating loss of more than $700,000. But all that said, it doesn't mean it was a distinct case and there won't be others. Thamel and others have noted that schools might use this crisis to justify cuts they've been contemplating anyways, which could mean that for some college athletes, the pause in sports might be permanent. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.